Chapter 2. Roland. He woke up, suddenly aware of two equally pressing problems. The acid's worn off, and eight people are here to kill me. Both of these facts concerned him equally. He couldn't remember his name or where exactly he was, which made the impending kill team all the more concerning. He opened his eyes. His vision was blurry and unfocused. His head felt filled with sand. Roland. Oh shit, that's my name. Roland! Wondered how long he'd been asleep. He reflexively triggered his deck before the dim firing of a synapse reminded him that he'd permanently disabled his data connection, well, a long time ago.
5,226,000 minutes.
His hindbrain, what Roland called the acres of microscopic processors and databanks spun into his blood, spat the knowledge out unbidden into his conscious mind. Roland tried to curse, but wound up spitting out a wad of brackish phlegm instead. His eyes settled on a quarter-full bottle of fungus whiskey. He grabbed it, drained it, and rooted around on the table where he'd found it until his digging turned up a sheet of acid. He ripped the sheet in half, ate one half, and pasted the other on his sweat-damp chest. Roland's brain didn't wait for the acid to do its job. Nanomachines couriered the lysergic diethyl acid directly to his synapses. The drugs took hold in a matter of seconds. Acid softened the world around him. His hindbrain's running commentary faded into a sort of generalized hyper-awareness of the world around him. He sighed, relaxed, and remembered. A woman hovered over him, her hands on his shoulders, her knees on either side of his body. Sweat dripped down from her short black hair onto his face and chest. Her pupils were the size of dinner plates. She smelled like acid and desire. She smiled, revealing a row of Damascus steel teeth. Roland pulled himself out of the memory. He felt the strike team advance. His hindbrain generated a map of the approaching assassins. They were still a solid minute from his hovel. There were six men and two women on the team. If he'd wanted, a microsecond's focus could have told him which members of the group were vegetarians, where two of the team were on their menstrual cycles, and how recently each of their firearms had been cleaned and oiled. But Roland didn't care about that information. He was trying to remember where he'd left his gun. The one-room hut Roland occupied was best described as squalid. He knew he'd lived there for quite a long time, although he wasn't sure if the home was his in any legal sense of the word. Its one room held a filthy mattress, a hot plate, several dozen empty bottles of liquor, and a tinkling carpet of spent whippets. A large knife was embedded in the door. Roland couldn't remember why. He knew he'd had a gun at one point, even though he couldn't currently find it. He stood up, still wobbly from the massive dose of GHB he'd taken with his nightly tequila, and started kicking at the piles of bottles and drug paraphernalia in the hope that one of them might contain his gun. He found some bullets after a few seconds' search at the bottom of a Folgers coffee tin that was half-filled with marijuana. Next to the tin was a large metal bowl of stagnant water. Roland glanced in and caught sight of his own reflection. His black skin looked ashen and clammy. Unusually pale, he thought, but he didn't recall enough about himself to know if that was really true. His face was long and drawn, with wide, jutting cheekbones and a patchy, uneven beard. His head was covered in stubble. The center of his face was dominated by a crooked, heavily scarred nose. Roland had no recollection of why it was scarred, but he knew the injury must have happened back before the army filled him with chrome. He turned away from his reflection and continued his search through the house, scattering food-encrusted plates, empty Coke bags, and old-fashioned print pornography into even less organized piles. No dice. Did I pawn it? He wondered, as his machine-assisted eidetic memory warred with his profound intoxication. Roland was now conscious enough to remember that not remembering much was pretty normal for him, and he should really worry more about the assassins coming to kill him. Oh shit, right! The strike team was just 50 meters out now. He felt a gust of wind and, in the same way, felt as two of the men began to assemble a large sound cannon behind a rocky hill that faced his hovel. He guessed it was a Callahan Mark 38. Roland didn't know how he knew the weapon's name, but he knew it could burn out even his armored synapses with a few seconds of continuous fire. One man was on overwatch for the Callahan team. He carried a two-bore Ruger Falchion anti-vehicular rifle. The mingling odors of fear sweat and baby formula wafting off him triggered sense memories of someone holding a newborn infant. Roland guessed the man must have a kid back home. A kid he's scared of leaving fatherless if some chromed-out acid head fillets him. That was useful data. He filed it away in the chunk of his brain least likely to lose that information over the next 4 seconds. Roland's memory was real good in 4-second chunks. Over the next picosecond, he caught equally informative whiffs of the others. It was enough to suggest that two of the women in the main assault team were lovers, and they'd both had mil-spec subdermal armor implanted recently. The acrid scent of fresh sutures hung heavy in the air around them. Roland could also tell that one of the men in the assault party took heavy testosterone supplements, either because of a genetic abnormality or because he'd been assigned female at birth. The fourth man was moderately addicted to ephedrics and riding into battle on a high stimulant wave. The last member of the assault team was the only one to give Roland any pause. He could guess the man's height and weight, 6'5", 240 pounds, from the sound of his footfalls. Roland could smell the Sig Sauer 500 submachine gun in his hands, but otherwise the man was a sensory blank. No sweat, no hydraulics, and black to thermographic sensors. The man was chromed. Not so heavily as Roland, of course, but the competent and well-armed squad he led might be enough to narrow the gap. Where in the shitting shit did I leave that gun? The static balance in the air changed as the Overwatch team warmed up their sound cannon. The assault team was close now, barely 100 feet out, waiting in the cover provided by several large boulders at the base of the rise that held Roland's ramshackle home. He knew how this fight would go. They'd unleash the Callahan for a good 5 seconds while the kill team moved into position and kicked in the door. Next, the big bruiser and the two women would enter while the remainder of the assault team fanned out to cover the sides. Textbook post-human kill team tactics, he thought. He didn't actually remember any of the fights this conclusion was based on, but he'd clearly lived through similar encounters, and, if he trusted his body and hindbrain, he would again. Roland finished searching the apocalyptic ruin that was his kitchen sink. The pile of plates had been large enough to hide a short-barrel AR-10, but his gun wasn't there either. Fucknuts, he cursed. The profanity brought a tiny serotonin spike, and Roland felt himself calm down even as the noose tightened around him. His combat wetwear did most of its work in the moments before meat met metal, so Roland closed his eyes, slumped his shoulders, and relaxed while it cross-indexed his memories of past firefights with his current sensory data. A moment later, Roland was presented with 3 potential counter-assault strategies. He selected the one that sounded like the most fun. The Callahan fired, blanketing his home and much of the area beyond it in a web of noise designed to assault and eventually fry the synapses of anyone dumb enough to stand too long in its wake. Pain lashed from Roland's inner ear and sparked out to every nerve in his body. It would have been enough to leave a strong man curled on the ground, shitting his guts out, but Roland just felt a distant ache. His experience of the damage was more akin to seeing the check engine light on a car than true agony. He was aware that if he waited too long, the sonic weapon would blow out the pain dampeners on his spinal nerve gates. Lucky for him, the assault team didn't wait that long. Roland felt the big man arc his leg up to kick in the door. It crumpled in, and Roland lunged left. This helped him avoid the first spray of covering fire as the chromed man and both women barreled inside. Roland flung himself into the hovel's main structural support beam, which ran up the building's left wall. He hit it with the rough speed and force of a light truck going 20 miles an hour. His momentum carried him and half the left wall into the rocky ground outside. Roland's filthy little home tottered and swayed. It collapsed first on the left side and then on the right as the whole structure failed. Roland was already up, with a jagged piece of 2x4 in his hands. He rushed the ephedrics addict, holding down the left flank. The man got 2 shots off and, to his credit, both hit right where Roland's original heart had been. And then Roland was on him. He shoved the wood into the meat of the man's face. It gouged off enough flesh to fill a pint glass and shattered the poor fellow's jaw. He went down, hard. Roland smelled the familiar scent of anti-hemorrhagic nanomachines as they rushed to save the man's life. He caught a slight sour whiff of the cheap clotting agents in the man's blood. Roland guessed it was Traumax brand, which was convenient. Traumax had based their whole line off a piece of Brazilian military wetware that itself was based on a crude synthesis of horseshoe crab blood. The organs worked well enough, unless you happened to be an amphetamine addict who'd suffered massive tissue damage. Then your Traumax unit would flood your synapses with adenosine to knock you out, rather than risk pushing more amphetamines on your stressed heart. Something in the smell of the man's blood set off a powerful sense memory buried deep in Roland's hippocampus, vines slashing his face, boiling jungle heat, and his fist connecting with the face of a heavily armed young woman. Her orbital bone broke under the blow. He smelled her blood meet the air, and she dropped. The memory flashed by, free of context, and the time it took the other man to hit the ground. It was frustrating to only remember the what of an action, and not the why or the after. It was like knowing how to ride a bike without remembering who'd taught you and when. Only for everything. Roland found it somewhat unsettling. A 12-gauge slug hit him in the thigh. It dug deep, hit reinforced bone, and stopped. The little machines in Roland's blood were already cutting it apart by the time he stopped musing and bounded over to the other flank man. Roland chucked the 2x4 hard as he ran. The wood impacted above the assassin's temple with an audible crack, shattering the man's sphenoid bone. The battle drug started to trickle into Roland's synapses now. A cocktail of endorphins, oxytocin, serotonin, and epinephrine concocted to make violence as addictive as a fat rock of crystal meth. Roland instantly wanted more, and he knew he could trigger a greater dose by stomping on the downed man's skull and ending his life. He fought down the urge and, instead, grabbed the man's AA-32 combat shotgun and rolled for cover behind a red rock boulder. He was almost fast enough. But either the Overwatch man had some aftermarket parts Roland hadn't smelled, or all the hardcore drug abuse had done long-term damage to his reflexes. Maybe no more crack binges, Roland thought, as a massive two-bore slug threw most of his left shoulder out into the desert behind him. Roland belted out several fuckwords as pain flooded the banks of his dampeners. And just that second, with truly exquisite timing, the Callahan crew swiveled their weapon round and poured sonic fire at him from above. For a fraction of a second, everything went dark. Roland's world was riotous red pain and little else. If his body had required the input of his conscious mind, he would have been in a real pickle. During the milliseconds it took for his dampeners to cut through the pain haze, Roland's body dove 10 feet to the left, enough to take him out of the Callahan spray and behind an outcropping of rocks. Two rounds cracked into the rock above his head. Roland came back to himself as the shards cut into his skin. He glanced down at the ruin of his shoulder. His little blood robots were already hard at work, rebuilding the muscles, bones, and sinews blown out by the giant slug. A couple seconds more, and the limb would be usable again. But Roland had a better idea. He used his intact arm as a flesh catapult and flung himself up over the boulder, towards the Callahan and its three guardians. The man with the two bore fired again. Roland had known he would, and his hindbrain had already calculated the ideal motions to avoid the dozen most likely shot patterns. He sailed over the half-pound bullets with ease and used the hand of his intact arm to rip his wounded arm free at the shoulder. Roland landed hard in front of the Callahan. He swung his own severed limb like a club and knocked the barrel to the left. Then he laid into the gun's crew with a mix of pounding swings from the arm and stomps to the other men's knees and ankles. Bones shattered. Assassins screamed. The man with the two-bore and the newborn child at home wavered and broke. Roland had expected this. Many normal humans, even hardened veterans, found it nauseating and unsettling to see a man move as fast as he could move. Add beating their friends half to death with a severed limb, and, well, he'd predicted the guy would break. "It's not your fault, buddy," Roland thought as he watched the man run. "Don't feel bad." He'd wanted to say that out loud, but he was having trouble working his vocal cords. In roughly 7 seconds, Roland had eliminated 5 out of 8 threats in the kill team. His hindbrain predictions had given him 6 more seconds at least before the entry team cleared themselves from the debris of his collapsed hovel. But the other post-human, the man who'd shown blank on most of Roland's senses, had freed himself faster. Roland realized this when a trio of 50-caliber slugs burst into his chest cavity. He dropped, avoiding the last 3 rounds of the burst, and rolled behind another pair of boulders with his severed arm in hand. The two female assassins were close to freeing themselves now. Roland could hear them struggle out through the vibrations of their bodies in the red sand. He couldn't see the other post-human, but he'd triangulated his most likely location. Unfortunately, the other fucker had him dead to rights. If Roland broke cover, he'd be shot to pieces. Maybe more pieces than his trauma organs could put back together. "All right, oh boy. Do we eat a bunch of lead and charge the bastards? Deploy the meat rockets and run for a gun while they're blind?" He suddenly remembered the spring-loaded assault razor embedded in his left forearm, and then the 22mm grenade pistol buried in between his small intestine and his sigmoid colon. Did I remember to load it before shoving it in there? But before he could take any action, the firefight was interrupted by an oddly familiar voice. "Hey, Roland, how's it swinging?" Roland hadn't smelled or heard this new man coming. The voice was very familiar. Roland felt a name on the tip of his tongue, but it just wouldn't come.
"Weapons down, lads and lasses. I've seen enough to guess the end."
Roland smelled frustration waft off the two women, now free and angry. The other post-human smelled like nothing, but Roland felt him lower his weapon. Some gray, dead strand of memory pulsed in the back of Roland's brain, and he guessed that it was safe for him to stand up now. So he did, and put eyes on the mystery man. The fellow had a lopsided, squarish jaw with a very deliberate 5 o'clock shadow. His nose was thick and bulby. His red hair was tangled into dreadlocks that were more the result of inattention than stylistic choice. He was tall, muscular, but lean with a bare chest that was covered in tattoos of black snakes. They writhed in time with the beating of his heart. He wore nothing but a pair of red leather chaps and a broad, calm smile. His bare penis swung pendulous in the breeze. Both of his palms were extended, out front and visible. It was the kind of gesture one used to calm an animal. Roland's synapses fired and misfired, and a string of fragmented memories ran through his mind. He recalled a really good hot dog on a sunny day, push-ups in the mud, searing pain in his genitals, and the taste of shitty ditchweed. These memory fragments were all somehow tied to the man in front of him. It took Roland a moment, but as soon as he got a full look at those coal gray eyes, the man's name clicked into place. "Oh, shit," he croaked. "Jim?" Roland hadn't spoken to a person in months at least, maybe longer. He sounded more like a suffering cat than an English-speaking human. But Jim understood him.
"Yep," he said.
Roland sighed, looked at his severed arm, and crudely shoved it into place. It had clotted a bit, and his stub burned as the tiny robots in his blood got to work reattaching his once-and-future limb. "Jim," he said again, sounding a bit less like a frog after a 6-day Coke binge. "You fucked up my house, man. That's not cool." Roland didn't know how long he'd known Jim. He couldn't even pin down the man's last name. But he was pretty sure they'd fought together, back before the revolution, and he was certain they'd had a threesome with a devilishly handsome Spetsnaz man. He couldn't remember that guy's name, or why they'd all been in Panama, but he didn't expect that was the sort of experience past him would have shared with someone who wasn't a friend.
"You remember me?"
Jim asked.
"Basically," Roland answered. "Good, because I got a favor to ask."
Hey everybody, Robert Evans here. I hope you just enjoyed the chapter you listened to. I hope you enjoy the chapters to come. If you would like to read the text version of this book, either on the web or on your e-reader as an EPUB, you can find those on the website atrbook.com. So again, the free, ad-free EPUB and the text of every chapter will be on atrbook.com. Thanks!